You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, and welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's AL East beat reporters. Doing a lot of trade talk as the non-waiver trade deadline approaches. We talk Orioles, we take a look at whether they might make a big outfield move, whether they might actually move Kevin Gausman, as rumors suggest, and if none of those, what the Orioles do pull off to improve their offense. We take a look at the Red Sox potential to add a number one starter and talking about the job security of John Farrell and Ben Cherington. We talk Yankees, we'll be looking at the second base options and the possibility of adding a starting pitcher. When we look at the Rays, we're talking about Matt Moore, Drew Smyly, and some general thoughts about the deadline. And when we talk Blue Jays, we'll be talking about Aaron Sanchez and the possibility for a rotation upgrade. Joe, there was a Giancarlo Stanton update yesterday. It seemed fairly routine, but also good news. What's the latest with Stanton?
Yeah, I mean, clear to take some swings, you know, some dry swings, just get the bat going, test that wrist hand and make sure, you know, the scar and the incision are all healed and everything. And from there, he'll take it to eventually hitting off the tee, the flips, and, you know, maybe 10 days or so, he could be back in the lineup, which, you know, for a team that hasn't had a lot go right, that would be a very welcome sight. But first things first, just, you know, get him going, get through this. It's not an injury that requires a lot of strengthening or big rehab. It would be a matter of you feeling strong, then get the timing back and a little bit of the pain tolerance that you can play with some discomfort in that hand, wrist, which he's going to have, which is normal.
So that's a little strange for me to hear, just for the combination of a team that their hopes are certainly fading and an injury that's a pretty major injury for a power hitter. I mean, wrists are just a big deal. Is there any thought that maybe he doesn't come back till he's pain-free, or is that just too long to do? I just wonder, like, if you worry about a guy developing bad habits, it's interesting to hear you say that. What's the thought process there that he might come back and play with pain?
It's because of the break, Matthew. It's the hamate bone, which is that little hook-shaped thing that really isn't attached or does much. You know, it just kind of is there, just frays and goes away. So it's not like there were multiple fractures or a fracture that healed per se. They just take that little hook-shaped thing out and clean it up. And all indications are it's fairly routine. And a lot of players have had it. Some have come back more quickly than others. Just from some of the research and some of the people I've talked to know a lot more about it than I do. They say, you know, they are saying 4 to 6 weeks. They say 6 weeks is about right. And I'm kind of in that boat. Mainly for what you say, power hitter, and there's no power hitter like this guy, Matthew. And if one thing we learned from StatCast is he mashes a baseball 115-plus miles an hour more than anybody on the planet. And you clearly want him to be healthy. But that said, like I was saying, it's not like, you know, bone coming together and healing. It's just a matter of just, you know, getting that timing down, make sure that the incision's fine, and then just go from there. And that's kind of the nature of this injury. If it was more of what I was just talking about, then I'd be a lot more concerned whether, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, or, you know, or more necessary.
You wrote fairly recently about how this was a really pivotal trip for the Marlins. It was a chance for them to gain a little ground, maybe make it a little harder for the front office to part with some pieces. As we speak right now, they have yet to win a game on this trip. Where does that leave them as July 31st approaches?
Yeah, I think it leaves them, you know, clearly, you know, they're coming out of the break, you know, riding some momentum, winning 3 or 4 from Cincinnati. You know, Philadelphia seemed like a winnable series. Arizona, then on to San Diego, that they're just kind of wanting to see if this team can play a little bit like they envisioned. They kind of know, you know, even though they're saying what they are, where they are in standings, and that playoffs are remote, but they want to see progress. And they still, like we talked about before, believe in that core. But where it's leading to is there's going to be multiple moves, and I don't think that's going to shock anyone. And, you know, I think even if they, you know, won 6 or 7, there were going to be multiple moves, and some of the guys leaving town are the guys that probably would have been leaving anyway, and that could be Matt Latos, is the guy they're actively shopping, and Dan Haran, who's done a really, really good job, and you might want to strike while it's hot and get and move him by the end of the month as well, and in hopes that by then Nicolino and Urania or whoever else they feel could kind of round out the rotation will be in line to kind of carry them the rest of the way.
How extensive do you think the moves will be? And we've talked a lot about Latos and Heron. Those seem like the obvious guys, only because they've got real value. But, you know, there are some other pieces that you have to think they'd at least get calls about. Do you expect this to be, you know, move a couple of pieces who aren't going to be there next year, or do you expect it to be any more extensive than that?
Yeah, I think it could. I think it could go anywhere to 3, 4, 5. I mean, especially if it keeps heading in the wrong direction, by their assessment, they may start looking at, you know, kind of make up. They know where they are. They, you know, Martin Prado is a real pro, and in his comments, you're hearing him saying that he's not worried. He just want to kind of help this team get back on stride and inform. Well, that's one reason why they're probably not going to move this guy. He's what they want. You know, they know what they have up the middle. They know what they have in the outfield. They love their catcher in Real Muto. Everyone else, Matthew's in play. I mean, obviously Jose's not, but, you know, they're going to be, you know, looking at strengthening pitching, starting pitching, hopefully controllable. And whether it's this deadline or not, you know, Michael Morse has not panned out. The fact that they're not even playing him, you know, when he's healthy shows, you know, what they feel about where he is right now. And I'm sure they're trying to move him as well. And, you know, that, you know, it's going to probably be their offseason project to get a first baseman that will be more of a thumper that they feel could offer that. I'm not even going to say protection, because Stanton posts numbers regardless of who's around him, but just production. You know, they just need to get, you know, a lot more production for moments like this when he's not in the lineup. You just can't have the offenses dry up and have no, you know, you're having Echevarria hitting third one day, you got Prado hitting cleanup one day. You know, that's not the way this team was built. So, I'm anticipating anywhere 4 or 5, whether Kohler gets involved in the deal. I wouldn't be shocked. I think Cishet could be moved. But, you know, I think that you could see 4 or 5 trades by the end of this month.
How do they view 2016? I mean, this team is not – I mean, things can change. There's still plenty of season left. But this team is not, you know, even playing 500 ball. It's not like they're on the fringes. They are well under 500 to the point where
right. –
You know, it would take a pretty significant improvement to be a contender next year, the kind of improvement they thought they were going to be this year. I guess, you know, what I'm getting at is, do they view this as a team that should contend in 2016, or do they view that maybe they have a little sledding and maybe this is still another year or two away to really get this right and be where they want to be?
Yeah, those are all fair, because it clearly wasn't the step forward they thought they were getting. And, you know, the minor league system isn't exactly a strength right now either. I mean, they moved, 11 to 13 prospect types or guys that had just gone, either were in the minors or up a year or so, just to get some of these core players we've just talked about. So, you know, they're a couple of drafts away from getting back. They probably need to, you know, like I said, move somebody they're probably not the most comfortable with to kind of get some organizational depth. But, so Matthew, I honestly feel they think that they have a very good basis for a team. They need to get a little bit better starting pitching, meaning, you know, not just guys that are 4 or 5s, but guys are 3s and 2s to circle around with Jose. And then they'll take it from there. I mean, we see how unpredictable this season has been for so many teams. You know, Boston didn't think they would be where they are. Houston was hoping, and they're where they are, you know, when no one saw that coming. So, you know, you kind of have to take it, you know, at where you are at the moment, just feel that the pieces are in place. But there is a clear, to me, lack of this very clear organizational direction, because they've known some clubhouse guys they need to move, yet they haven't been moved yet. And, you know, they've been very patient and you know, they're sticking with a manager who's a general manager. And, you know, that may be their biggest offseason decision is, where's the direction coming from in the dugout? Is it going to be DJ again, or are they going to get him back where he was the best and from an organizational standpoint, and then go get somebody that's going to fit what they're trying to get to? So, I wish I had more clarity, because I haven't seen a ton of clarity. So I think they're just banking that this existing core is going to carry them pretty far in the next year or two. And it's going to have to, otherwise I'm going to do yet another dismantling, and we know how those things always go.
One last thing. The Derek Cosart situation remains odd. I mean, this this condition keeps coming back. And, you know, if anybody's ever dealt with vertigo knows that if you haven't, it's easy to dismiss. And if you've ever had it at all, it's really, really nasty stuff. So where are they as far as figuring out what's going on with him and getting him back to where he can perform again?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. There is concern. You know, there is concern. You see a neurologist, they're determining whether it's just the vertigo, or is it, it's been a couple of times now. You know, from what I understand, he was on the mound the other night, and he just wasn't feeling good and knew immediately it wasn't dehydration. And you know, it's hard enough to play this sport with all your senses and to be off, you know, like that in your head. I think they need some answers before they worry about fixing, you know, mechanics or whatever it is on the mound. But it is a situation where doctors are looking at him the last couple of days, and they're trying to get to, indeed, is it just purely vertigo? Did the antibiotics knock all of it out? Is it, you know, is this a mild case, or is this something more troublesome? But, you know, definitely something the next couple of weeks, whether he pitches again this year or not, may not be as important as if he's okay or not, to kind of let him become the player they hope he will be. But first, they got to make sure that everything's okay with him. And right now, neurologists are kind of determining what that is.
Brian, since the last time we recorded the podcast, the Yankees called up and sent down Rob Refsnyder, presenting and then at least temporarily dashing an interesting solution to their second base issues. Where do they stand right now as far as sorting out what they're going to do about second base between now and the end of the year?
Yeah, it's funny. I was feeling really good about that. I predicted they were going to call up Refsnyder at some point, and then I was completely surprised that they sent him back down and decided to go with Stephen Drew some more. I think you haven't seen the last of Refsnyder. I think four games is such a small sample size. You saw some ability there and that leads you to believe that the Yankees can win some games with Refsnyder at second base. I think he's got a future, and you'll see him again. It was really a situation where they decided they didn't want to vote somebody off the island, be it Stephen Drew or Brendan Ryan, and because they could option Refsnyder down to the minors and then bring him back later in the year, which I assume they will do, that's the way they chose to go. And look, it paid off. Brendan Ryan had a big hit and helped beat the Orioles. And, you know, Stephen Drew is playing – he's Stephen Drew. He's playing Stephen Drew baseball. I don't think that anybody looks at Drew and Ryan and says that is absolutely what would be at second base for game one of the American League Division Series, but we'll see. I expect Brian Cashman to be working the phones here. He seems pessimistic that he's going to pull anything off, but Cash is pessimistic by nature. I think that he always downplays the idea. I can't remember one time where Cashman has ever said, yeah, I expect to get a deal done, and then something big did happen. So he may be playing possum a little bit. I think that you look around this lineup, you say the obvious area where they could upgrade is second base. Whether they do it internally and call back Refsnyder or do something from outside, I think that remains to be seen.
One guy that comes to mind, and it's a fairly daunting financial commitment, even for the New York Yankees, but I got to think it would not take much at all to land Brandon Phillips. And while Brandon Phillips is kind of a shadow of what he was 4, 5, 6 years ago when he was a real star player, he's still a pretty good player. He's a good defensive second baseman. He can get a hit. He can run into a little power on the bases. He is certainly a useful player and to some extent kind of what they thought maybe Stephen Drew would be. Is he an option, or is that contract just not something they would want to take on?
Well, I think that they're open to it. I think that there's always a communication, and Cashman can go upstairs to Hal Steinbrenner and plead his case. And you've seen that at the deadline last year. They added salary. They added a guy like Martin Prado, who was not inexpensive, and he wound up winning some games for them down the stretch and playing well. I think that if Cashman decides that he wants to go down and make that case for picking up Brandon Phillips, then it's something they would entertain. I think that they are the Yankees. They look at this division. They see it's up for grabs. They haven't been to the playoffs in a couple years. That might be one area where they might look. I think that you can make a case for a guy like Ben Zobrist as well. Maybe he would come in. I think that there's a lot of ways that you could upgrade over the Drew, Ryan, and even Refsnyder. I know the fans love Refsnyder, but you've seen him for four games. I think that if you can go down the stretch and have a proven veteran guy, that's typically the way the Yankees do these things. And look, you look at the Yankee track record, I can't remember the last time they went with a rookie in a pennant race. I mean, you'd have to go back to maybe Derek Jeter. I'm sure there's a more recent example than that, but it's typically not the way that they go. They like the veteran players. They like the proven talent, the track record. So Brandon Phillips, it's an interesting idea. And remember a few years ago when Yankee fans were crying out for the Yankees to get Brandon Phillips because the Reds were offering him for Brett Gardner. You think Yankee fans are happy that deal didn't get made? And the Yankees did shoot that down at the time. They said Gardner is going to be a heck of a player and we're going to hold on to him, and they turned out to be right.
The question to me, to some extent, is kind of a big-picture philosophical question. It's kind of, what do the Yankees think this team is, and what do they think it needs to be? Because you know, they're looking at a six-game, five-and-a-half-game lead right now. Could be six-and-a-half by the end of the day. They're in pretty good shape because I don't really see, you know, I've been kind of honking the Orioles all year, but that's just not happening at this point. The year's getting late. The Blue Jays seem interested in fixing their problems but haven't been able to yet. So I guess the question is, if you're the Yankees, there is some extent to which you can continue to try to be responsible like they have done to some extent, not deal away whatever they do have in prospects, not take on an ugly contract like Phillips and think, you know what, this team is maybe good enough to squeak in. That's not the way the Yankees would have done business, never mind under George Steinbrenner, but even 5 years ago. So I wonder, how do you see them sort of philosophically? Is this a team that thinks, you know, if we get there and take our chances and don't have to blow anything up, that's pretty great? Or do you see them as saying, look, this team's got to get better. The goal here is still to win the World Series.
More the latter than the former. I think they're happy to be where they are. I think they've been pleasantly surprised by some guys, and we've talked about A-Rod and Teixeira. I think that they don't see themselves as a perfect team. They're the cream of the AL East right now. You wanted to make the case for Baltimore, but Baltimore came in here, and it looks like the Yankees are going to sweep them. So I think that it's hard to look at any other team in this division and say, well, yeah, that's a better team than the New York Yankees. I think that they're all flawed in their own ways, and the Yankees may be the least flawed, but if there's a way you can upgrade here at the deadline or even after, the Yankees have been pretty good at pulling off some waiver deals that you wouldn't have expected in years past. I like it. I think that coming into the year, we probably underestimated this team. I think we pegged them right around 84, 85, 86 wins, and they're going to be a little better than that. I really do believe that they will. I think health is a huge part of that down the stretch. But, you know, if I'm the Yankees, I feel pretty good about where I am right now, and I'm thinking about playoff tickets.
If they're looking at bolstering a team to try and win it all, one way it seems to me they could do that, and of course, you know, Yankee fans and Yankee media, the talk is always anybody who's out there who's exciting is on the radar. One way they could do that, it seems to me, is bolstering that playoff starting rotation. Not that it's a weak rotation, but one more guy that you would start in a playoff series would be a pretty compelling ad. They continue to get mentioned with Johnny Cueto. Is a guy like that, Cueto, Hamels, one of those kinds of guys, is that a viable thought right now, or is that probably not going to happen?
I would venture to say no. I'm leaning toward no on them because I feel like, as we mentioned, if there is an area where they can upgrade, it's at second base. But I think that anything can happen here. You look at a short series, a five-game series, a seven-game series, and you say Tanaka and Pineda, if healthy, the Yankees can win with that. And they're intent on keeping CC Sabathia in the rotation. He's going to continue to get a chance. So do you feel good going into a series if those three are your top starters and you've also got Ivan Nova and Nate Eovaldi and maybe even Adam Warren can play a role? I feel all right with that if I'm the Yankees. I think that there is room for improvement. And the two guys you mentioned, Cueto and Hamels, that would be a ridiculous upgrade, I think. Basically what that tells you is that CC doesn't need to take the ball in a short series. So, you know, maybe that is a deal worth making. But I think that given the fact that they're watching Pineda's innings, given the fact that Tanaka, who knows what that is, I mean, so far so good, except for the one DL stint, but could happen at any time. If I'm Brian Cashman, I'm making those texts and I'm making those calls, and I've got a foot in the water there. I've got more than a toe dangling in the pool here to see if one of those studs can come the Yankees' way.
So it's sort of an interesting idea you just noted. Let's put the cart way before the horse. They're not in October yet, but this idea that even in a short series, Sabathia would start, it's sort of an interesting question to me, because is there a point where commitment to Sabathia, and not his regular season rotation spot because that seems safe, but where commitment to him because of his clubhouse standing, because of his contract, whatever, maybe affects what they think about doing if you're talking about not Cueto or Hamels, but to name a guy, Mike Leake, somebody like that, who wouldn't be a clear upgrade over him in a playoff series. I don't think I'm formulating this very well, but is there some degree to which Sabathia and that commitment to him is a challenge in looking at a guy you might add for a playoff rotation?
No, I see what you're saying. And to me, Mike Leake is not a significant enough upgrade where I would think about giving up any of the prospects that they would have to give up. And they've been pretty steadfast that they don't want to give up guys like Aaron Judge or Luis Severino or Greg Bird or maybe even Rhett Snyder. I think that Rhett Snyder is probably the most touchable of those four that I just mentioned. But I don't see that as a clear upgrade. I think that if you get Cueto or Hamels and you put him in that rotation, you could sell me on that. I'm not sure you can sell me that Mike Leake gives you such a better chance to win in a playoff game than CC Sabathia, because the strength of this team is the bullpen. You need five and two-thirds good innings out of CC, and then you just turn it over. And this is coming off one of CC's best outings of the year, where he out-dueled King Felix and beat the Mariners. And I know the Mariners aren't a great hitting team, but look, he fits well. He's still got it in there. He can give you a chance. And if you're going in October and you've got a situation where you need to ask CC to give you five good innings and let everybody else do the rest, and it can be up to Dellin to come in and get four or five outs, and Miller can get more than an inning, I take my chances with that. I would not bet against CC Sabathia coming up with a big performance in an October game.
Britt, you wrote an interesting piece earlier in the week about this is a really pivotal stretch of schedule coming up for the Orioles, and certainly possible if things change between now and when this goes live, so I may seem a little like an idiot in a few hours, but as of now, the Orioles are in danger of losing the first three games of this series. There's to some extent it's kind of a dumb question. You lose games in July, it's bad. But if this trip doesn't get turned around, if they don't find their footing over the next week, how big a deal is that as far as approach to the deadline and that kind of thing?
Well, it's definitely a big deal. And Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations Dan Duquette still maintains that no matter what happens on this road trip, and they will cap it off this weekend in Tampa, that no matter what happens, they're going to still be looking to be buyers. They're not going to be sellers. But you know, it would be hard if they were, and obviously right now it looks like they may get swept here in New York. They did win the first series in Detroit, but they do continue to lose ground to the Yankees. Every loss in New York is really like two losses, because it puts the Yankees up a little, it puts the Orioles back a little. So I think that they are still looking to be active. They do want to win now, because they're going to lose so many guys to free agency that they really don't have a choice, Matthew. I mean, if they decide that they're going to be sellers, and this team is looking at another couple of years before they're good, because, again, they're losing so many guys at the end of the season, they kind of have to go for it. The window is now.
Right, and that's sort of the interesting question. I mean, it's not really in this organization's DNA to make big deadline splashes. You know, as we've talked about before, what Dan Duquette does better than anybody is find those subtle moves that pay off really well. But they're getting mentioned, at least, with some big names, with guys like Justin Upton, who was of interest to them, I believe, over the winter, Carlos Gomez. They obviously have an outfield need. Could you see them making that kind of splash and doing something that, again, is somewhat out of character and bringing in a real all-star caliber outfielder?
I'd be surprised, because, you know, just talking to scouts and people in the organization, they feel like in order to make that impact move, they would have to move a Manny Machado or Jonathan Scope or Kevin Gausman, and quite simply, that's not going to happen. So, you know, you have to give up something to get something. Obviously, that's kind of the way it works. So unless they're able to pull off some kind of major steal, I don't see them acquiring a major player here. I don't see them getting a big starter, even though, as you know, this time of year they're rumored in anything and everything. And there was a report yesterday about Kevin Gausman potentially being a guy they would trade. Buck said this morning on MLB Network Radio that was just laughable. So, you know, it's really that time of year where you're going to hear them rumoring a lot of things. I just don't think at the end of the day that they waver from that organizational philosophy. They're certainly not going to give up another top guy, another young guy. Their two top pitching prospects, Hunter Harvey and Dylan Bundy, are both rehabbing from various injuries. So both of them are kind of lower, their stock's lower than it normally would. And you saw them last year give up Eduardo Rodriguez, which killed them, in order to get Andrew Miller. Now Eduardo Rodriguez, of course, is doing very well in Boston. I know they had to make that move, but I just don't see them doing that where they kind of empty the cupboard in the minor leagues. I see them making a smaller move again.
I do want to put a pin in that Gausman question because, as anybody who listens to this knows, he's a guy of interest to me, and that has been a story. But first, I do want to – I wonder – you talk about a guy like Upton, that you can understand where that's a non-starter. If it's somebody like a Gomez, not just him, but if it's a player that you'd have some control of, you know, Gomez is signed through next year. If it's a guy that they would have for a little while, you know, to use another example, a guy like Cole Hamels, not that they're in dire need of rotation help, but if there were an impact guy who they'd have control of for a while, does that change that equation at all, or is that still a non-starter?
Oh, maybe a little bit, but I still don't see them trading either one of those three guys. And I think that's what teams are looking for the most. You know, somebody, a young rising star to package a deal around. And if you're not going to trade, go for Machado or Gausman, what are you going to do that's going to make the other team say, all right, you can have this guy? I don't see what else they can do to really get those kind of guys, get the Uptons or the Carlos Gomez's. I don't see how they can do that unless teams get desperate, which there are so many teams right now that are still in it, that still have a chance, and it's becoming tougher and tougher to really get those desperation deals at the deadline.
As I said, I want to go back to Gausman because it's an interesting name. You know, he's a guy who has been identified as a real, presumably a front-of-the-rotation guy for them for years to come, but there does seem to be a lot of noise about him being potentially available. As you note, the manager says no way. Where do you think that comes from? Do you just think that comes from maybe other clubs asking on him and that's kind of what gets out? Because that does happen this time of year.
Probably, and you know how it is, too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that just thrown against the wall. So I think that maybe somebody said, well, you know, we're not trading him, but if someone blew us away, you know, that kind of thing gets misconstrued. All of a sudden, it looks like the Orioles are shopping Kevin Gausman. He's not on the table. I would be more than shocked, whatever the word would be for more than shocked, if they trade Kevin Gausman. I don't think it's happening. I just think it's a lot of talk, which always kind of happens around this time when you get to late July.
As it stands now, and we kind of touched on this at the beginning, as it stands now, there's a pretty decent chance they're going to be 6.5 out of first place at the end of the day, and somewhere between 3.5 and 4.5 out in the wild card. Which is a tougher hill to climb because you've got so many clubs involved in that. That becomes kind of a big mass of teams fighting for two spots. And so I wonder, again, just philosophically, as you know, I don't think anybody thinks this team is going to sell. But as that equation changes, how do they view that? Does that make it more essential to do something? Does it make them more measured? Just in terms of the philosophy, not so much the specific moves. As those odds change, how do they sort of view that?
Well, honestly, I think as they fall further and further out, you've got to make some kind of dramatic move because, like I said, they have so many guys that they're going to lose that they feel like they can't afford to pay at the end of the season that are going to be free agents that, you know, if you were far enough out, if there was a Kansas City Royals in your division or a Cardinals-type team, if the Orioles were facing a daunting uphill battle, it would be in their best interest to sell and see what you can get for a Wei-Yin Chen or a, you know, Chris Davis, Matt Wieters, all these guys that they're going to project to lose at the end of the year, but they're not in that situation. So they're within striking distance. I think they have to do whatever it takes to stay in this because they might not get this chance again for another few years. I mean, their team could be completely decimated. You could be looking at a complete start-from-scratch operation. And let's not forget that the Duquette to Toronto rumors, I'm sure, will pick up even more steam again this winter. So you're looking at an organization that could be at a pivotal point, maybe at some crossroads here this winter. That's why I think as they get further along, they have to go for it. Maybe they jump and make a bigger move than anyone could have expected. I don't know. Again, they don't have the luxury of sitting back and waiting and say there's always next year. They didn't really do much this offseason, and now it's coming back to haunt them.
Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of the interesting question. If they are not going to part with these young major league players, and two of the top lights in the farm system are out of the picture, and they need to do something. I mean, where does that kind of leave them? Is it maybe multiple moves? Is it, you know, a few different Duquette specials where he tries to buy cheap and find some multiple interesting guys? Is it something creative? Is it dealing a major league pitcher out of their rotation? I mean, what if they've got to do something and the sort of seemingly obvious ways are either out of the question for them or not an option, what does that leave?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I'm just as interested as anyone else to see what they manage to do. I mean, they are master manipulators when it comes to that current roster. So I don't know if it's going to really test Duquette's ability to find a smaller move that's going to really impact them. I do think if they get an outfielder and they're able to kind of cut ties with two guys on their roster, it would help them, you know, addition by subtraction. They'd have a little bit more roster flexibility. But again, I'm curious as well because they can't make a big trade, like I mentioned. Their top prospects really aren't doing that well. There's nobody down in the minors who you say, ooh, we just got to wait for this guy to come up. He's going to change the whole landscape. So they're really at a very interesting time, and it's going to be fascinating to see what they end up doing, if anything, and how they end up selling it here over these next few weeks, because they've made moves past the trade deadline that have helped them. Specifically last year, they were able to go out, get Alejandro De Auza. He did a real nice job for them. And they were able to do some smaller things, Jimmy Paredes, and he's come out and really helped them this year. Will they be able to do that again? I'm not sure. You know, they haven't really hit on any of these smaller moves. So is their luck running out? I don't know. I think it'll be fascinating to watch over the next few weeks what they're able to pull off, if anything.
Could you see them moving a major league starting pitcher? I mean, that seems to be one area where even if they don't deal Gausman, there's some depth there. There's some guys who stepped in and shown something. Obviously, they'd love to move Norris, but that's not a guy with a lot of value right now. But if you're getting creative and you're thinking of ways to approach things, is an option to deal from the major league rotation, say, hey, we've got depth to cover this, to upgrade some other area of the roster?
It's always an option. I mean, and Ubaldo Jimenez has struggled again out there today for his second consecutive start. He's owed a lot of money. Maybe you look into ways where teams would potentially pick that up, and the Orioles get salary relief, and you're looking at promoting a Mike Wright or a Tyler Wilson in AAA to kind of take that rotation spot. You mentioned Norris. They'd love to deal Norris, but like you said, his stock is low. So maybe it is something they look into, something they explore, because that would be a little bit more of a creative way to get something back. Again, though, their starters aren't in high demand. You're not talking about a Johnny Cueto type of guy, but you know, somebody could see a Ubaldo Jimenez and say, you know, maybe he'll work out elsewhere. He did have a real nice run going. So I don't know what they do, but that's certainly an area where they can look and say, maybe we have some chips here. Maybe we can make something happen. Again, this is a lot of pressure here on this front office, because, like I said, the window is now. How do they turn this around? How do they keep the Orioles in it? Because this team, over the last few days in New York, has looked like a team that is free-falling.
Gregor, sort of an interesting position for the Blue Jays right now as they look at a guy who conceivably might have been some interest to them being shipped away right before a game against the Blue Jays in Scott Kazmir. As we continue to look at this opportunity this club has and the clear fix that they need, one of the names is off the board. Where do they stand as far as some kind of upgrade to their starting rotation?
Yeah, well, the good news for the Blue Jays is that, you know, we've talked a lot in the last few weeks about it really being kind of a seller's market, but it just seems that the name of starting pitchers available out there kind of continues to increase with each passing day, and you know, it might continue to be that way right up until the trade deadline if a few other teams become sellers. So that's the good news. And Kazmir getting traded to Houston probably sets the market a little bit as well. So, you know, Alex Anthopoulos should have some more clarity on what it will take to get a deal done. And you know, the Blue Jays definitely touched base with Oakland about that Kazmir deal. And, you know, those two organizations are very familiar with each other after going through discussions during the offseason with the Donaldson trade. And so they know exactly where each other stands. But there wasn't really much common ground there. And you know, that shouldn't be overly surprising at this point, but there's a lot of other guys out there that Anthopoulos needs to, you know, make a move on, and you know, he's known for his due diligence, checks in with just about every team out there, but there's a lot of intriguing possibilities, and you know, the one that seems to be, you know, that could be a nice little fit would be if the San Diego Padres decide to switch switch things up a little bit and go into sell mode on that end, whether it's, you know, a big move like a Dan Shield or some guys, you know, like an Andrew Kashner or a Tyson Ross. There's some controllable arms out there as well. And typically that's what Anthopoulos likes to do is get guys with more than 1 year of control. But then on the flip side of that, this would be a good year to also go after a rental considering the window of opportunities that we just have.
One guy we've talked about an awful lot and maybe talking about in the future tense for one last time here, Aaron Sanchez's return is imminent and it is apparently to the bullpen. That's apparently settled. What do you think the expectation is when he gets back on the big league roster?
Well, I think the expectation is that he's going to fill the role that he did last year. And, you know, he was a major impact guy in the bullpen for the Blue Jays in the second half of last season, taking the closer's job away from Casey Jansen. And, you know, I really think this is something that manager John Gibbons has probably been pushing for all along. It was the constant topic of conversation as to whether or not he was best suited in the bullpen or the rotation. Now, I think long-term, you know, his future should still be in the rotation because he has that kind of upside, and you want to take advantage of that value. But at the same time, it's hard to criticize this move because the Blue Jays' bullpen has been struggling so much that they desperately need another arm to go along with Roberto Osuna and the recent emergence of a guy like Bo Schultz. Outside of those two over the last little bit, they haven't been able to get any kind of quality, consistent innings from their bullpen, and Sanchez should go a long way in helping solidify that. And I think what it also indicates is that, you know, Anthopoulos is pretty confident that he's going to be able to pull the trigger on a starting pitcher before the deadline because, you know, Felix Dubron, I don't think is going to be long for the number five spot in the rotation. And I just don't think the Blue Jays would have moved Sanchez out of the role of a starter permanently unless they knew that there was going to be someone else coming in sooner rather than later to fill that void.
So here's my question. In four rehab appearances, now again, scouting the stats is always dangerous, but
yep.
Four rehab appearances, Aaron Sanchez pitched 8 2/3 innings and walked 7 batters. That's not very encouraging, and it wasn't getting better. It was 2 the last time out. It was 2 the time before that. What's the level of confidence that he can be an effective strike-throwing reliever in the near future?
Yeah, and, you know, as he's kind of touched on there, you can only read so much into the results of minor league starts, but the one thing you really can read into is, you know, balls and strikes. You know, if he's not able to throw it over the plate, you know, it doesn't. Everything else doesn't really matter. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays originally expected to have him back for the series finale in Oakland on Thursday. That didn't happen because of the way his first appearance out of the bullpen went for AAA Buffalo. He just wasn't throwing enough strikes, walked a couple guys. You know, he did give up 2 unearned runs that came on half balls, but, you know, the fact is those 2 walks kind of loom large. And, you know, this has been the problem with Sanchez. I mean, we saw it earlier this year, you know, as a starter, he was leading the league in walks for a very long time, and eventually he did start to figure that out by having the command go down. The one thing last year is that, you know, when he came up, that was supposed to be a problem for him as well, and he was able to, you know, really do that relatively flawlessly out of the bullpen. But he's prone to this kind of stuff. And, you know, I think that's why they're going to give him a little bit more time. They hope that the progression will be similar to the way it was earlier this year, that he'll kind of settle into that kind of groove. But it kind of remains to be seen. But, you know, it's, for him, everything goes back to the fastball command. He's got that overpowering fastball, but he needs to be able to throw out the strikes in order for it to make a difference.
So to go back a topic, as we talk about what they could do to upgrade that rotation, what do they have to give? What could the Blue Jays do to bring in a starting pitcher who would make a difference, even if it's not a one, a guy who would be good enough to be a noticeable upgrade to this rotation?
Well, the big chip that they have is Daniel Norris, and he's someone that they would probably be more willing to trade. You know, I think Jeff Hoffman is a guy who's going to be completely off limits. You know, teams are always going to ask about Mark Stroman. But he's off limits as well. I just don't envision a scenario where either of those two get moved. But Norris is a guy who could be moved. And, you know, his value isn't quite as high as it was a year ago because he has had a bit of an up and down year for Buffalo. Really, last year, his value was basically what Jeff Hoffman's is right now. And you can't necessarily say that's the case anymore. But at the same time, he's obviously still a very young guy and still a very prized prospect in his own right. So there's still an awful lot of value there. So you'd think that if they were going to pull the trigger on a very big move, he would be the centerpiece of that. But, you know, there's also scenarios where the Jays might try to look to hang on to him as well and go after kind of a second-tier guy that might be more of a rental as well, that they could get a little bit on the cheap. The problem for the Blue Jays in that regard is that they don't have a lot of those kind of mid-level prospects that are on the upper echelons of the minor leagues. Really, Dalton Pompey is really the only other guy who fits into that role. Maybe a Miguel Castro that we saw earlier this year in Toronto. Those guys are kind of on the cusp. But, you know, everybody else, for the most part, their minor league depth is single A and below. And, you know, a lot of times when teams are looking to pull these deals around this time of the year, they're looking for guys who are a little bit closer to the major leagues. And that's something the Blue Jays don't have a lot of, with the exception of a Daniel Norris. So they do have some intriguing possibilities, and they do have some, you know, a guy like Anthony Alford in Class A, who's having a very strong year, has really come on after, you know, dedicating his full time to baseball after previously splitting it between football and baseball. He's a guy who's come on, but, you know, it's going to be a challenge. There's no question about it, because they don't have a lot of those, you know, double A and triple A position player prospects. A lot of their strength is on the mound. And sometimes when teams are looking for, you know, a multiplayer deal, it might be able to be centered around pitching, but they also want some position player guys in that deal as well.
I have seen some, I don't know if you even call it more than chatter, but they might deal off the major league roster, which is sort of an interesting idea. There are a ton of guys who can hit. Is one of the options maybe parting with not a prospect, but a major league bat off of their roster in order to upgrade the pitching staff?
It could, but I have a hard time seeing it. You know, I think the very strong preference is to strictly deal prospects. I mean, I know one guy that a lot of people seem to mention is Devin Travis. And to me, I just don't see a scenario where the Blue Jays look to move him. You know, they do have the depth within the lineup to be able to facilitate something like that, but it would still be a pretty significant blow, because then you're looking to try and get through the rest of the year with a really light-hitting guy like Ryan Goins and utility-type players like Munenori Kawasaki. And I just don't think that that's something the Blue Jays want to do. And, you know, the one that seems to get mentioned all the time in Toronto, but to me it's kind of needlessly, is Edwin Encarnacion. Has been mentioned multiple times, you know, in, kind of thrown out there in the rumor mill. But I just don't envision that as a scenario that can realistically happen either. He's someone who can block a trade because of his 10-5 rights. I just don't see Anthopoulos going to him at this time of the year and asking if he would make a move. So I don't think you're going to see any major shakeups on the 25-man roster. You know, if it really came to that, I think the Blue Jays ultimately would probably stand pat. But I think they're pretty confident that they can get some kind of deal done with just their prospects, and the fact that there's, you know, upwards of probably 10 guys who are available out there that could help this team. The fact that there's that many of them available means they probably should be able to get something like that done.
Ian, to use an expression from a member of a hated rival, as Yogi Berra once said, it's getting late early. The odds are not looking real good for the Red Sox. Now, again, things can change, but they're 11 out and 8.5 in the wild card. How does this affect philosophy? And again, I think we're in a point in baseball where the whole buyer-seller thing is overstated. There's most teams are a little of both. But as we get closer to July 31st, and as the Red Sox have lost that momentum they seem to be building a couple of weeks ago, how do they view what's in front of them as far as trades and the deadline?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't think it changes a heck of a lot, because whether it was trying to win a pennant this year or trying to get better next year, I think the Red Sox need to go out and get some pitching. And if they can do that, you know, before July 31st rather than wait till the offseason, it might behoove them to do that. There's just, you know, they thought they could get through the season without the, you know, classic frontline starter. We all talked about it a lot, wondering if it might work, but it just seems that that is what has been missing on this team. You don't have that guy who every fifth day when he pitches, you think you're going to win. And I think that it changes the attitude of not only the whole team, but the whole rotation. So I think that they'll be all hands on deck the next 10 days or so, seeing if they can get that guy who can help them not only this year, but next year too.
So there are presumably a couple guys who fit that description on the market, and maybe others. I mean, you know, it's sort of interesting. We've talked a lot about Hamels and Cueto, but if the Tigers open for business, that's a whole different animal, and maybe some other guys. You know, there are interesting potential names on the market. So As you look at the Red Sox addressing that and looking at a guy to put at the front of the rotation, whether it's a real one or whether it's one of those sort of 1-2 kind of guys, like I think it's fair to describe Hamels,
yeah.
Who do you think are the viable options? Who do you think makes sense both in terms of the pitcher and the cost?
Well, Hamels will be a guy. And the one intriguing thing about him is he has, they would have control over him for the next 3 years after this year. David Price is a guy they've liked for a long time, so they could go there. You have Smarjo with Chicago. So there's a few guys. I don't think they're necessarily honing in on one guy. They're gonna look at all the guys and see what the cost is, what the cost benefit is, and I think they really need to go get a pitcher. There's just a bad atmosphere around this team right now, and I think they need to do something. Frankly, from a PR perception, because people in Boston are revolting against this team right now.
And I think one of the big questions here is what do they part with? When we talked earlier in the year, a lot of the talk was about a catcher, was about Blake Swihart. That's a much tougher move to make now. And they're down one catcher for the year. And look, you don't really know what Vasquez is. For a guy whose game is his defense, if you don't really know what the elbow is like when he comes back, it's really tough to deal one of those guys if you're not sure of the other. So what do they have that they could part with that could really convince another club to do a deal for a front-of-the-rotation starter?
Yeah, I mean, you look at one guy who still has a pretty good trading chip, and I think that's Henry Owens. And you also have Brian Johnson. So I think one or two of those, I think maybe you pick one of those guys and you tell a team, one of these guys is available. And, obviously that's not alone going to be enough to get a deal done. Then you throw in a Jackie Bradley Jr., who I think has had a really good year at AAA and could still be attractive. He seems to me like a classic, change of scenery type of guy who he could do well for another team. And, just kind of go through the farm system and look at some of their other they have some good prospects in that farm system. There's a couple guys who are untouchable. Look, you're not going to trade Mankata, obviously. I don't think you're going to trade Eduardo Rodriguez. I think they'd like to keep the two catchers we just talked about. But aside from that, there is some depth in that system, and you do have to get creative, and you might just have to package a few guys.
When you talk about sort of retooling rather than rebuilding, because they're clearly not going to blow this up. They couldn't even if they wanted to, but I don't think there's any reason to think they'd want to.
Right.
One of the things that it seems like has to happen is getting some more look at some of these interesting young guys. Maybe it's time to find out what Bradley is as a major leaguer right now. So what I wonder is, do they try to, and is it possible to, part with some of these veteran pieces? The names raised by Joe Sheehan this week were Victorino and Napoli. Is it time to look at parting with some of those pieces? And maybe, again, as we note, buy or seller is sort of a misleading term. Maybe buy and sell between now and the deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are the two guys, I mentioned in my story yesterday that would be the guys that you would think about selling just because, look, they're both their contracts expire at the end of the year, Victorino and Napoli. And you're probably not looking at bringing either guy back for next year. And the way the standings are right now, it makes sense. And I think both of those guys could be attractive for a contender, particularly Victorino, who is still a pretty good ball player. If you play him in the right way and don't kind of overuse him. Napoli's kind of an interesting one because he just looks, completely lost at the plate. I still firmly believe that the guy doesn't lose it at Mike Napoli's age, and I think it's just one of those years that, Mike Lowell had it in 2005 with the Marlins, and then he went on to have, two or three pretty good years after that. I just think it happens to some guys where, it just becomes a physical and mental battle for them, and I think that's what's happened with Napoli. But, yeah, I think that Napoli and Victorino, the Red Sox have fielded calls on both those guys already. I think they'll continue to do so. And like you said, it might make sense, to play a Bradley, unless you trade Bradley as well.
You mentioned the reaction in the home market that this is not going over well, and that's not surprising. Yeah. This club spends a lot of money, and the expectations, the self-established expectations are to win every year. You look at a team that right now is in fifth place for a second straight year, and it starts to come up the question of the manager. It's kind of similar to what you said. Guys don't forget how to hit. Guys don't forget how to manage. This is a guy who won a ring 2 years ago. But it seems that the question is at least now being asked. So the question to me is John Farrell completely safe? Is there something that this club has to show over the next 2.5 months to keep that the case? Or is he, no matter what, the manager of the Red Sox in opening day 2016?
Yeah, I think that, you know, any time a team like the Boston Red Sox, if they don't turn this around and if they finish in last place 2 years in a row, Matthew, I don't really think anybody's safe. And that includes Ben Cherington, too. I think they have to look at the whole operation. And for Cherington, this would be three last place finishes in his 4 years as general manager. So you'd have to look at the whole operation, the whole way of doing things. And you might have to, you know, if this is this bleak for the rest of the year, you really have to look at the way they've been doing things. And that's why I think there's a lot of urgency from everyone involved here, from Cherington to Farrell to the guys in that clubhouse, to turn this thing around. And at least, you know, if you're not going to get back in the pennant race, at least play like a team, as Ryan Hannigan said the other night, at least play like a team the city can be proud of, you know, because right now that hasn't been the case, and the fans are really turned off by this team. Not just that they're not winning, but just some of the mistakes they make during the course of the game. They're just not a very clean baseball team. So I think that, you know, everybody would like to see this team play better for a lot of reasons.
And that does set up another question, I think an interesting one, because the conversation always seems to be about Farrell, and for whatever reason, the general manager has stayed pretty much bulletproof so far. But if, as you know, in your tenure, it's one really, really good season, but one good season out of four, that's not a ratio that is sustainable for a long time. Do you get the impression that at least those questions are starting to be asked, that there is some notion of heat on the front office if this doesn't get turned around, if this team doesn't get at least back into contention before the end of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think John Henry really likes Ben Cherington, really respects him. But at the same time, John Henry is a great businessman, and so is Larry Lucchino. And if you get to the end of the year and the Red Sox have finished last place with their payroll three times in four seasons, you know, you have to start looking for reasons. You have to start changing your way of doing things. And I just think that, you know, it would be too much evidence not to do something drastic. So I think, again, that's why these last couple months of the season are pretty fascinating for the Red Sox to see if, you know, is this really going to be the team they're going to be the rest of the year? Or are they going to, you know, maybe morph into the team that a lot of people thought they would be when the season started?
MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.